We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
I think what's going to happen, you're starting to see a little trickles of it, but these regime media outlets in New York and D.C., you're going to start seeing stories after the midterms. Biden may not be physically fit to be president. He may have, you know, this or that, and you're going to start seeing that, and there's going to be a drum. Now, they should have done this 2 years ago, and it was obvious he shouldn't have been running for president, but they didn't do that because they had an agenda. Well, now I think their agenda is going to be that they want to push him aside because they view him as a liability. So stay tuned for that. I'm usually right about these things because these people are very easy to see. We see their narratives. So you know what they're going to do. You see it from a mile away.
That was Governor Ron DeSantis 2 years ago during his reelection campaign, predicting what we saw unfold yesterday. Good morning. I'm Jenna Ellis, and this is Jenna Ellis in the Morning. And President Biden has declined the nomination of the Democrat Party and endorsed belatedly, because it was two separate ex posts, very weirdly, Vice President Kamala Harris. So it was almost a, oh, oops, the interns forgot to put it in there. Let me go ahead and endorse her. But this is what Al Mohler said. President Joe Biden's sudden announcement that he is leaving the 2024 presidential race seemed inevitable, but the reality of Biden's statement coming just after the Sunday news programs were broadcast hit like a political bomb. Biden's withdrawal represents a stunning reset of American political history. In his statement, Biden addressed, quote, my fellow Americans, and then boasted of political achievements before, at the end of the third paragraph, declaring, quote, I believe it is in the best interest of my party and the country for me to stand down and focus solely on fulfilling my duties as president for the remainder of my term. So this begs the question, well, a couple of questions here. First, why was this not done on video? Where is Joe Biden? I think Americans deserve to have proof of life, since at least by this statement that probably wasn't written by Joe Biden, posted by Joe Biden, I'm wondering if he even knows about it, or did he, like the Babylon Bee suggested, he woke up from his nap and said, did I miss anything? And, oh, Mr. President, you've resigned. You don't remember that? So this is all very weird. And the fact that we haven't seen Joe Biden after he tested positive for COVID last week, and then we haven't seen him after he posted this statement, I think that it's correct. And Republicans calling for proof of life, since he still, as far as we know, occupies the Oval Office, that really is a very good question. And then that begs the second question, of course, is that with a resignation that he really didn't acknowledge his failing mental decline, he didn't really acknowledge anything, he just said, you know, for the best interest of the country, whatever those may be, and you can all read between the lines here, basically, is what he's suggesting, he's going to focus on the remainder of his term. Well, why should a candidate in the words of many Republicans, I mean, Senator Josh Hawley's posting, a Speaker Johnson, a lot of Republicans are now saying, if you're not fit to run a campaign just for the next 4 months, how are you possibly fit to run the country for the next seven? And that is a very good question. And so a lot of Republicans are, I think, wisely calling for Biden to simply resign. Now, I think that is, and I've said this for a while, I think that is the correct move. I do think, and this prediction, like a lot of us, you know, it's pretty easy to predict that Biden was going to withdraw from the race. I'm going to predict, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to predict that Biden will ultimately withdraw from the presidency, because if Kamala Harris is the incumbent running and she is now being set up to get the Democrat nomination, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, then it would be much stronger for her and a stronger position for the Democrats going against Donald Trump, a former president, for her to be the current sitting president. And you may say, well, so many questions about that, but never, ever think that the left actually thinks like us, that they actually care about the rule of law, that they care about the best interests of the country. I mean, this is all about the Democrats knowing that Joe Biden is not going to beat Donald Trump. And so they have this swap out of their candidate. Now, Speaker Johnson yesterday on, I think it was ABC, was suggesting that the GOP may look into, according to the law in some states, file some lawsuits and other things for this ballot swap out, because, as he rightly says, the selection of a candidate shouldn't be made behind closed doors with the establishment donors. It should be through the will of the people, if that is the process that is actually set up. It shouldn't just be this artifice that we get to go and vote, or if, you're a Democrat in the primary, you get to go vote, and then it doesn't actually matter. Doesn't mean anything. We just, we, the elites, can just set up whoever we want as the candidate. The problem with that is that Biden himself withdrew, at least as far as the record shows, and the GOP has rightly been calling on Biden to withdraw and resign because of his failing mental cognitive issues and what we clearly saw at the debate. So even if there was some evidence that, and I think there's a lot of evidence, frankly, that the Democrats are doing this because they know that Joe Biden can't win, the Republicans themselves have also said Joe Biden just can't physically do this. He is unable. He's not capable of doing that. And when a candidate withdraws, or there have been instances where an incumbent running for office dies in office, and are we gonna sue the ballot over saying, well, we got to replace him with somebody else? So the withdrawal here is not necessarily that there was this backroom coup, but more, what exactly happens next according to process. And here's what to know about the Democrat process, or what is coming up at the DNC. And the rules, interestingly, were changed again in 2022 to allow a replacement of a candidate more easily without having to go back through asking the voters, who would you prefer? And so Kamala is being set up that way. And I think it's no shock and no surprise that this is happening at this particular time, because if Biden had withdrawn earlier, Kamala may have not actually won any of the delegates going to the conventions. If she actually had to go and caucus in primary, I mean, remember in 2019, when she was running for the Democrat ticket, she didn't win a single delegate because she's that bad. And yet, the headline this morning, just an hour ago from Fox News, is that she hauled in $50 million in donations just since Sunday. I mean, it hasn't even been 24 hours. I don't even think it's been 12 hours. Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So I'm bad at math, but yeah. So 8 p.m. Okay. So it's been over a little over 12 hours, but I mean, that is a huge haul, and it's not because Democrats love Kamala Harris so much. I mean, I've been talking to some of my Democrat friends, some of the operatives still in D.C. They're not fans, but they would rather vote for literally anyone on their ticket than Donald Trump, which is why a lot of us, and myself included, had suggested earnestly to the GOP to put up anyone besides Donald Trump. And I realize that there are some mega fans out there of Donald Trump, and we're with him. He has the nomination, all of that. I get all of that. But this is exactly the road that the Democrats have been strategically moving toward for a while now. I mean, we saw this coming 2 years ago. I mean, Governor DeSantis was saying that at his rallies. I mean, many political commentators and people in office, even elected officials of GOP, have been saying this for years. And if there was anyone else, if it was a Governor DeSantis, if it was, you know, anybody else, even a Nikki Haley on the GOP ticket, there would be a lot of Democrats who would say, yeah, I would vote for a Nikki Haley or a Governor DeSantis over a Kamala Harris, but not over a Donald Trump. So here we are, right? And here is the interesting way that all of this is unfolding. So now the speculation over the legitimacy of this candidate and some of the GOP, you know, like Speaker Johnson, are saying, well, you know, this is just a coup set up by the Democrat establishment elite. Well, yeah, that's true. But is that something to actually go to a legal battlefield over? I don't think so, because this isn't actually historically unprecedented. It is unprecedented in this sense. Never has a Democrat who has actually won or secured the nomination, even though he's the presumptive nominee, the convention hasn't actually happened yet. So there, you know, there could have been a brokered convention, all of those kinds of things. He hadn't actually accepted or received the nomination yet. But never in the history of the Democrat Party has a nominee who is the presumptive nominee who secured the delegates withdrawn. But it's not unprecedented that a current sitting president has withdrawn with the ability to be reelected, or that a Democrat nominee or another candidate became the nominee through a brokered convention and without participating in any primary or caucuses. And this happened just as recently as 1968. So this is what I posted on social media yesterday. The brokered convention or candidate legitimacy is a brief history lesson, and this is why we need to understand history. So the Constitution doesn't guarantee the right to vote democratically for a private party ballot candidate selection. And a Democrat brokered convention happened in almost this exact same manner as recently as 1968, when an incumbent Democrat president stepped aside. President Lyndon B. Johnson announced he would not run for re-election, and his vice president, Hubert Humphrey, secured the Democrat nomination despite not earning or entering any primaries or caucuses. So after that, the Democrats adopted the current process of choosing a nominee through a more transparent process, and then Republicans later adopted that same process of primaries and caucuses in 1972, because many Democrats at the time were concerned about a lack of legitimacy in a kind of process where regular Americans, their own base, don't participate. So the DNC changed their rules as recently as 2022, as I mentioned before, that disenfranchise regular voters and ignore primaries and caucuses. So will Kamala Harris, if she ultimately becomes the nominee, as it looks like she is set on that trajectory, will she overcome claims of an illegitimate selection rather than nomination, just as a selection, when historically the Democrats have disfavored those kinds of brokered conventions? So basically, this is just Democrats doing what Democrats do. They're being hypocrites, right? Because historically, they've disfavored these kind of brokered conventions, yet they're setting her up for exactly the same thing. Notably, though, the Democrats did not win the 1968 election. So former Vice President Richard Nixon, the Republican nominee in 1968, defeated the current incumbent Vice President Humphrey. Trump has been compared to Nixon for a lot of other reasons in the past. Will history repeat itself and a Republican former executive branch officer defeat a current Democrat vice presidential incumbent? Really fascinating, right? But I don't think that this is a good road to go down to say, you know, Democrats were challenging who you're putting up. Like, just beat Kamala Harris on the merits. And there are a lot of merits. One of those merits, by the way, though, is not this whole birtherism thing. The Constitution requires that the person, it's the individual citizenship, a natural born citizen. That is the qualification of the U.S. Constitution. Kamala Harris came into her citizenship by virtue of birth, not at some time after birth. That is the legal test. And yes, it's never been decided at the U.S. Supreme Court because it doesn't really have to be. It is just very clear in terms of the law. It does not matter whether her parents were immigrants, student visas, whatever. It matters how she came into her citizenship. And even if the law were changed and so-called anchor babies do not have birthright citizenship, Kamala Harris did and does. She was born in Oakland, California. That is a non-issue. Don't even go down any of those lines. Those are not the best arguments, and frankly, they make the GOP look weak and stupid, because the much better arguments are some of the things we're going to get to in the next segment. But interestingly, Barack Obama is the biggest voice of the Democrats that is not at all, to date, even mentioned Kamala Harris. He hasn't endorsed her. The Clintons have. A lot of Democrats have, but not Barack Obama. Get your popcorn ready. We'll be right back.
You know, there are many ways we can impact the world around us. Some are more direct, like helping our neighbors and serving in our churches. Other ways are broad, like becoming community leaders or supporting missions. Of course, taking care of our families is a given. If there was a way to impact all of those at once, would you be interested? The AFA Foundation is a great way to touch your family, your neighbors, and even complete strangers all over the country. You may not realize it, but you can support AFA with a charitable gift annuity, a trust, your will, or a charitable rollover. We realize not everyone knows what those are or how to set them up, but that's okay. Many of your questions can be answered on our website, afafoundation.net. Find answers and resources to help you make an informed decision. And if your decision is to move forward, you can get in touch with Riley, Chelsea, or Jessica to start setting up your legacy. Touch more lives than you imagined possible when you visit afafoundation.net today.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome these leaders for coming in to have this very important discussion about some of the most pressing issues of our time. I am Kamala Harris. My pronouns are she and her. I am a woman sitting at the table wearing a blue suit. And
So, who is Kamala Harris, current vice president? And, you know, we all know her as the current vice president. We know her as Cackling Kamala. We know her as Word Salad Kamala. But I think we actually need to go a little bit deeper this morning, because if she is going to be the Democrat nominee and all roads currently point to Kamala Harris, we need to understand exactly what this country is up against. And I have said for a while that we are no longer a Christian society in practice, but a pagan nation. And what does that actually mean? Well, you know, of course, paganism is this term that was used by early Christians to distinguish between a faith in a monotheistic God and the God of the Bible versus polytheism, which was in the Roman Empire at the time, you know, many gods, and also specifically the ritual practice of paganism, child sacrifice. And a lot of people have rightly compared the historical tradition of child sacrifice and paganism to the current practice of child sacrifice of abortion. And abortion is the number one religious, pagan, occultish practice in America today. And the Democrats stand for it. They are open abortion advocates. They want state-funded partial birth abortion on demand. The Roman Empire was known for not just the practice of abortion, but also for infanticide, where some mothers and families would leave infants on temple steps just to die if they decided that they didn't want their baby. And we are basically just barely a couple of Democrat policy steps away from that. And one of the biggest reasons I think that Kamala Harris actually poses a significant challenge to, whether it was Donald Trump or anyone else, but to the GOP in general, is because so many women, unfortunately, in this country are pro-choice, and they've bought into the lie that they want abortion access. They call it reproductive health and, you know, all of these other nonsensical terms. And really all that it is paganism. And Kamala Harris, while she has this whole you know, word salad, and we can laugh at this. And there's been, especially in some recent posts, everyone talking about her saying to see what can be, unburdened by what has been. Well, let's talk about Kamala Harris actually saying that. And there was this clip, and I want to play this. This is only the first 40 seconds. This is actually a four-minute clip that someone called Genius Bot on X spliced together of how many times Kamala Harris has said this exact phrase that's not just word salad. It's actually intentional. So listen to this if you think I'm exaggerating. This is just the first 40 seconds. This is cut one.
I can imagine what can be and be unburdened by what has been. You know?
What can be unburdened by what has been?
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 What we can see, what we believe can be unburdened by what has been?
What 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 can be unburdened by what has been?
And again, this goes on for a solid 4 minutes. So this is intentional. This is part of a lot of her speeches. And if you watch the video, which is posted on X, generally, I mean, 98% of the time, when Kamala Harris is invoking this phrase, she's lifting up her right hand when she says and repeats that phrase, what to see what can be. She lifts her right hand to the air, and then unburdened by what has been, the left hand goes down and is it almost in a dismissive gesture. And our good friend James Lindsay, who is one of the best commentators on some of the social Marxism, the trends of paganism in the culture. He is an atheist, so we don't go to him for Christian theology, but we can go to him for a lot of other commentary on other things. He is one of, if not the smartest people I have ever met. And he posted this thread that I want to walk through because, well, we have, you know, so many things that we could talk about. Kamala Harris is a terrible candidate. Her record is terrible. You know, a lot of these things. And yes, we shouldn't vote for her just because of her gender or her skin color and the Democrats don't know what a woman is. You know, all of those things. I think all of those things are missing the bigger point, which is that she is repeating this phrase and is specifically so incredibly pro-choice. She is advancing not just cultural Marxism, but paganism and the occult. This is who is going to be likely the Democrat nominee. And we need to focus on this because this is always a spiritual battle. This is not just about bad policy. This isn't just about, you know, Democrats versus Republicans. This is about the future of a country. If we are going to genuinely claim being a Christian nation and advancing policy that is based in and rooted in a biblical worldview, or if we are going to elect someone in November that is specifically, intentionally, and obviously pushing for a Luciferian incantation and the occult. So let's walk through this. So this is James Lindsay's thread, and you can go and read it on X. I would encourage all of you to follow him on X. He's a little overly snarky sometimes, and that's okay. We don't expect any less from him, but it's his threads are just so incredibly well done. So he says this. Let's talk about Kamala Harris saying, to see what can be unburdened by what has been. This phrase, which she repeats all the time, is not mysterious. It's esoteric. That is, it's occult. It's a Marxist and Luciferian incantation, and that's easily seen. What esoteric means here is that it has a hidden meaning. It looks and sounds like goofy nonsense, but it isn't. People who know. That is, it's coded and Gnostic in its formulation, and the principle she's articulating is ultimately Luciferian, hermetic, a la Marx. And this is really important because while so many people have raised this phrase to point out that she's goofy, she's looks very stupid when she's speaking, she cackles, you know, some of these things, this phrase is very intentional. So James Lindsay goes on to say, we can set aside the hand gesture she typically makes, which we've just been talking about, while uttering this incantation, although we shouldn't. It's blatantly up on the right, what can be a worldly utopia, down on the left, unburdened by or liberated, emancipated from the mundane status quo. And along with this portion of the post, he posts a photo of a shrine to Satan, an occult figure, which is basically the goat or devil head with the pentagram on its head, the horns coming out, the wings, you know, obviously a representation of Lucifer. And Lucifer in this statue is making the exact same gesture that Kamala Harris is making with the raised right hand of what can be the worldly utopia, and then down on the left, unburdened by or liberated, emancipated from the mundane status quo. This is clearly a reference to the occult. So then Lindsay goes on to say, let's have a look at Karl Marx using the same idea. Here he is at the punchline of the Communist Manifesto explaining that when the proletariat organizes itself and executes a revolution, it can move forward into what can be communism, unburdened by class antagonisms. And so he posts a photo with this one of a portion of the Communist Manifesto that talks about political power. And this is from the Communist Manifesto that says, when in the course of development, class distinctions have disappeared and all production has been concentrated in the hands of a vast association of the whole nation, it's talking about communism, the public power will lose its political character. Political power, properly so called, is merely the organized power of one class for oppressing another. What does that sound like? Critical theory, right? That the oppressor versus the oppressed. I mean, it's classic Marxist theory. And this is where we have to make the connection between not just, you know, they're pushing drag queen story time, or they're pushing, you know, gender mutilation of children. That's all true and that's wrong and it's bad policy. But this flows out of an ideology that is rooted not just in Marxism, not just in communism as a political structure, but ultimately in paganism and the occult. And so when we say as Christians that we have a political theory and political organization of conservatism, that it versus populism, for example, we are specifically saying we are trying to conserve the truth, classic principles and traditional values that transcend time and space, that never change because they are grounded in the truth that flows from the person of God himself. And we are specifically referring to the God of the Bible as our founders did for our political paradigm, our ideology, and our political philosophy. And we're contrasting that right now. And there's an internal disagreement within the GOP talking about conservatism versus populism. And populism is this idea that we, the people, are the origin of, and the social contract theory is the origin of our political philosophy. And so that can change depending on the morality of a given culture. So populism, contrasted with conservatism, is this idea that we, the people, are ultimately the sovereign, replacing the God of the Bible. That's the difference, ultimately, in a nutshell, between conservatism, as Christians would embrace and accept it, versus populism. And this is why you're seeing the GOP platform excise some portions of morality, because we think we can, or they think they can, reinvent and reimagine society according to populism and the current what the people want. And that's classic democracy, right? And so this populist narrative of a leader who will champion the concerns of the worker, you know, you heard J.D. Vance express that. That's classic populist language. And some of that can be good. I mean, obviously, I'm for the worker. I'm for a free market. I'm for capitalism. But if those are based ultimately in populism, then there's nothing holding back society from reinventing ourselves when the majority of society and the populist quote-unquote narrative is ultimately pagan, right? This is why Christians should be conservatives and say, well, no, truth doesn't change, and our political philosophy is built from truth that doesn't change. And so our principles of morality and the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil in our law is ultimately grounded in truth, and so it doesn't change. So that's the kind of the internal battle in the GOP. But either of those is still better than ultimately this occultic Marxist communist narrative. So James Lindsay goes on to talk about how Marx opens the Communist Manifesto through the history of all hitherto existing society. What has been is the history of class struggles. And this is precisely what he says a communist revolution, Marx, would emancipate or unburden man from in the punchline. And you've seen yesterday, if you're on social media, a lot of people quoting Vladimir Lenin, who was a Russian, ultimately Marxist thinker, and that led to Leninism, where this quote saying, there are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks when decades happen. And this is basically referring to a tendency for society to remain stable, but then sometimes to, within a sudden change and shift, move forward and basically be unburdened by what has been, right? And so it's very interesting, some of these people that are now posting this quote, because I think that the Democrats are not in disarray. They are organized and they know exactly what they're doing. And this is ultimately to replace the Christian worldview in America and input a pagan, occultist, Marxist, critical theory basis to our law and policy. So Lindsay goes on to say, in other words, Marxism itself, in its own manifest declaration, identifies it as being able to move into, quote, what can be, unburdened by what has been, a socialist Marxist consciousness is a Gnostic awakening to see what can be unburdened by what has been. It is straight communism. And he goes on and has a couple of other things. You should really read this full thread. But then says the general theory or theology of Marxism, which is the study of God or truth itself. And so Marxism is a theology. Paganism, polytheism, or even Satanism, Luciferian, that is a theology. It's a wrong theology. It's an evil theology, but it is a theology. This is not about a secular versus Christian society now. We are into total paganism, occultish philosophy versus Christianity. So the general theory or theology of Marxism is that man is burdened by what has been, which is called his historical conditions, but can awaken to his true socio-spiritual self, which is socialist, so that it can be transcended, to see what can be unburdened by what has been. So for Kamala Harris, queerness is structuring and the educated mode of desiring society to see and feel beyond the quagmire of the present. This exactly same sentiment is expressed in critical race theory through anti-racism. So much of this sentiment that Kamala Harris repeats endlessly, seemingly weirdly, is an esoteric incantation of societal and human rebirth that is a cult. And communist revolutions have all started this way. Do not underestimate her. This is a spiritual battle. We'll be right back. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day.
All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And if you're just joining us, there is another headline to talk about. The Secret Service Director, Kimberly Cheadle, is set to testify before the House Oversight Committee today. So this coming from the BBC. Republican lawmakers are planning to return to Congress on Monday with the director of the Secret Service in their sights as their frustration and anger grow over the agency's response, or lack thereof, I would say, to an assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump. First on the agenda will be a House committee hearing on Monday with Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle, which Speaker Mike Johnson said would make for must-see TV for Americans concerned about security lapses at the Pennsylvania rally. Speaker Johnson told CNN on Sunday she's got a lot of, to answer for, and these concerns are bipartisan. Republicans who control the House have been unified in pushing Mrs. Cheadle to step down or be fired, and there is speculation that in her opening statement she will resign, but that remains to be seen. So this will happen later on this morning from the House. And this is a really good thing because there are a lot of very serious questions that the Secret Service needs to respond to. My biggest question, and if I were sitting in that committee, the thing that I want to know is what were the security lapses, if there were any, at, say, the 10 or so prior outdoor Trump rallies? Were there the same types of security failures, and just by the sovereignty and blessing of the Lord, there were no assassination attempts at those rallies? Or was this specific for some reason to Pennsylvania? Because when you're trying to establish, as I think Republicans are, whether or not this was intentional versus just gross negligence on the part of the United States Secret Service and all of those different parameters, you have to start with kind of that threshold comparison. So I'll be very interested to see where the lawmakers actually go from here. And the other story that happened over the weekend, which is just absolutely terrible, is the fire that broke out at First Baptist Church in Dallas. This is one of, it may in fact be the oldest Southern Baptist Convention church. Pastor Robert Jeffress, who's a dear friend of a lot of us here at AFA, I've known him personally since I worked for Dr. Dobson, you know, years ago. He was in studio with us there and has always just been a wonderful friend and someone who will teach the truth and then also will advocate for the truth in the realm of policy. And there were reports of several explosions at the church before this fire ultimately just completely destroyed that historic congregation. And this is what Pastor Jeffress had to say that night. I mean, you can almost see the flames in the background of this interview, but this is what he had to say. This is cut, I think, 2.
I just left the church, and a little bit after 6 p.m., we got word that the church was on fire, our historic sanctuary. This sanctuary has been around since 1890. It was the home for our church for a long time until we moved to our new worship center about 12 years ago. This historic sanctuary was the site of many personal events, including my own. I was baptized there when I was 6. I was ordained for the ministry when I was 21. It holds a lot of memories, but we thank God that nobody has been hurt. We had just concluded Vacation Bible School with over 2,000 kids. They were all gone. So God has protected us through all of this.
How do you feel?
It is, but I'm grateful that the church is not bricks and mortar or wood, it's people. And the people of God will endure. First Baptist Dallas will endure. And we thank so many of our friends around the country who are praying for us right now.
And please be praying for Pastor Jeffress and everyone at First Baptist Dallas. So let's welcome in Ryan Helfenbein, who is the Executive Director of the Standing for Freedom Center and also the Vice President of Communications at Liberty University. And, you know, Ryan, I know that you saw this headline and you posted a photo of you with your wife and your family at First Baptist Dallas not that long ago. I've had the privilege and opportunity to visit as well. I mean, this building, while Pastor Jeffress is absolutely right that the church is God's people, it's not bricks and mortar, this still was very historic. And some people, I think, rightly have compared this building for Protestants in the SBC almost like what Notre Dame is to Catholics. So how has this whole disaster and tragedy affected the greater evangelical community?
Well, I think it solidifies a moment, Jenna. I'm so glad you're covering this. But it's a moment of recognition of a building that was so significant to Southern Baptists for such a long time. We think about W.A. Criswell, who was there for nearly 50 years, his spiritual legacy, and then also George W. Truett. These were two, stalwart statesmen, Southern Baptists, who led the convention for such a long time, nearly a century. And we're talking about the largest Protestant denomination in America. Billy Graham had his membership at First Baptist Dallas, there when Criswell was the pastor. He had his letter there. And it was just such a significant church in Baptist life. And when a building like that is a landmark, it's a Texas landmark, is burned, I think it's a moment of recognition that, hey, just like what Pastor Jeffers said, this is a building. It is a building that for many, many decades, contained a spiritual legacy and a heritage, the preaching of the gospel, the teaching of the word of God. Christ was worshiped and praised for me personally. I took part in a number of worship services there. That wasn't my church, but my school was there. And I went there K-12, and so I got to hear some great preaching. But it's a recognition that this is a building. As significant as it was, it is still insignificant as to the people, which is the actual church. And it is a time of grief and mourning and sorrow when you think about something like that, that is a testament to faithfulness and to history. Yet at the same time, we move on and we march along. So I was so glad to see, Jenna, that the First Baptist Church gathered together for worship on Sunday morning, but just in a different place. So they were over in the convention center, and that's just what the church does. It is always a people. It is never actually a building.
Yeah, I was really grateful to see that on Pastor Jeffress's X thread, where he showed pictures of the Sunday gathering that was just right after this terrible tragedy to this building. And the timing of this is interesting, Ryan. And of course, we don't know yet what the investigation as to the cause of the fire, whether this was arson, accidental, or not. But the timing of this, just in this moment in history, struck me as, as this part of this timeline that you were just talking about, church history and our spiritual history. And this country is at a crossroads, and to see something that iconic of this type of a building that, yes, God's people in the church will move forward, no matter if we had a building or not. I mean, the early church met in the catacombs. We don't need some grandiose theater in order to be the church. But our spiritual heritage matters, and it's becoming so obvious that the left is trying to tear down all remembrances of our spiritual heritage and all semblances of any of this moving forward into their kind of leftist utopia. And so at this moment, this to me felt even bigger than just a building or just that it was First Baptist Dallas. It was almost a symbol of what is going on spiritually in our country with this amazing church in flames.
Yeah, I certainly agree that this is a moment where in America we have this recency effect. There's we don't have a lot of ties to the past. This is part of the problem with modernity in America. It is great to have old buildings. It is great to have, shrines to the past. It's kind of an Ebenezer stone, if you will, a stone of remembrance that these buildings can have a spiritual legacy. They can call the people of God to remember and to regard the past, and then also to be stalwart in marching towards the future. It's great to have these buildings. I agree that when something like this is lost, there is a sense of significance here. And will we remember? How long will it, will time march along before we soon forget people like Criswell or Truett or others? I would say young people under a certain age probably have no clue who those men are. And I think it is important, even as a nation, that we have places, wherever they are, houses of worship that we can go and visit. I've visited many such places in my travels, whether it be Moody Church, whether it be the First Baptist Church of South Carolina, one of the oldest churches in the country going back to the 1600s. These places of spiritual heritage are important, even as they are buildings, even as they are monuments and museums. It's what happened in them that made all the difference, the significance in this nation. And that was the preaching of the Word of God, and that was revival. I'll just add one more thing. 5 U.S. presidents visited this this place. The building is over 120-plus years old, but 5 U.S. presidents actually worshiped there on Sunday morning, which is truly significant. There are not too many churches in America that can say the same.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Ryan Helfenbein, who's the executive director of the Standing for Freedom Center at Liberty University and also the vice president of communications there at LU. And you mentioned something about our spiritual heritage and recognizing actually understanding the history of where we've been. And I'm seeing this contrast, and I spoke about this a little earlier in the show, on just the side of the right, this kind of divisiveness between conservatism versus populism. And I think that the rise of populism, it can be attributed to many things, but one of the key factors, I think, is this lack of history of understanding our spiritual heritage as a nation, not just a need and a necessity to understand basic civics and teach those principles in schools. But this is why people like Superintendent Ryan Walters out of Oklahoma is saying, let's bring the Bible back to classrooms. Well, why? Because you can't understand America's history and our motivations of some of these great leaders in the past unless you also understand the spiritual heritage and what has underpinned the truly Christian nation that was founded on the Judeo-Christian values. And that is contrasted with what we're undergoing, as our friend James Lindsay says, a global communist revolution, which will have disastrous results. And Kamala Harris, who is the poster child for the Marxist, communist, ultimately pagan worldview. And so how important is this that we don't just teach a populist kind of, MAGA right sort of mantra here, but actually intertwine with our politic an understanding of our spiritual heritage as well?
Yeah, I love the way you frame that question. When I think of populism, there is good populism and there is bad populism. And the bad populism are things like you see, like Mao's revolution or, Stalin. You think about the Soviets and the Bolsheviks, right, going back to the October Revolution, the French Revolution. These are bad populist movements. But there is a good kind of populism, and it is incredibly rare. You go all the way back to Mount Sinai, in which, God is giving the Ten Commandments to Moses, and he's bringing these Ten Commandments down to the people. You see the same thing in the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus is teaching the multitude. He's feeding the 5,000, and then he's teaching them, "You have heard it said, but I say unto you." This is the kind of principled populism, a spiritual heritage we've received from the Lord. It is not hierarchical. It is not elitist. It is God teaching and feeding his own people. That is the source of the gospel. That's why we believe in the priesthood of the believer, ultimately, and that God's word should be read and taught to everyone. And that's the good kind of populism. That is why churches are needed. That's why I think it is good that we have roots. I'm reminded of what Jesus said when he says the kingdom of God is like a man who brings forth his treasure both old and new. And so many people are focused on new, and that's the problem with modernity. We also need the old, and the old is good because the old teaches us principles and foundations that do not change. That's part of what it means to conserve, that we want to strengthen those foundations that remain, and we do need a link to the past. That's why it's important, I think, to teach history so we understand where we come from as a nation, as a country, as a people. That's why it's also important spiritually to teach the heritage of, to Christian children, to teach them their heritage, Old and New Testament, and as well as church history, where they come from. How did we get here to where we are in the United States? And so none of that is being taught today.
And Ryan, so well said, and we ultimately need to understand from the past the good and the bad so that we know where we are going for the future. We need to pray for America, pray for this country, pray for the Democrats, that they would understand and recognize truth in the person of Jesus Christ. So always appreciate your time, Ryan Helfenbein. That's all the time we have for Jenna Ellis in the morning. You can always reach me and my team, jenna@afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.